How we doing? Okay, I'm gonna get some help. I need this table with everything on it moved over. It's gonna be a show and tell day here, I guess. You okay to lift that, Orlando? All right, yeah. Amazing. What was it, a couple months ago you were in that accident? So, pretty amazing. So, all right. So I've got some stuff, and we'll get to this. We get to do the fun stuff in here in a second if you behave yourselves, okay? Can you do that? Can everybody behave yourself? Well, even if you don't, I'll do it anyway. So, all right. Let me grab my some sermon material. We are going to take a break, a little bit of a break, and may even just kick in a different direction. For the last several weeks, we've been talking a little bit about finding Christ in Jesus, and talked about the abrasive Christ and some different things, and the confusing Christ. Did some of these different topics and different discussions. But today, in accordance with our leadership team and with information that you have shared, provided to us a few weeks ago, that we wanted to come back and share with you about that. Now, when we look at this, we said, okay, it's summertime, there's going to be people on vacation. And we didn't know that we would all have to build arks this week because of all the rain. And, of course, the storm today probably kept some in. But that's all right. We put a contingency plan in shape. And what we're going to do is, for those who did miss, they can hear it on the web this week. And also, we're going to provide some CDs the next few weeks for people to take with you about this, because this is a really important part in the future of the church. And if you're visiting with us today, great, because you get to see a little bit of our vision and where we believe God called us. If you've ridden around the area, there's a church in Maryland and Delaware on every corner. Am I right? So did this area need another church? In some ways, if we look at it that way, we say no. But when we feel like what God's called us to do, and anybody who's been part of the ministry of Haven Church, we say yes. Am I right with that? We see how this ministry has changed lives. I just heard about an adoption that went through because of an interconnection between people in this church. And it's amazing. You know, sometimes I'm just in awe that God would utilize this ministry of this church. And so we're headed in a good direction. So in order to start off today, I'm going to ask, you're going to be the mouth today? Jim's going to be the mouth of the group. He got volunteered. Half the other people were sick or somewhere else the other day. So Jim is going to share with you from just the results of the survey. Just early on, real briefly, and then I'm going to get into the rest of the service. And we're going to give you a hint, we're going to make soup today, okay? Sound good? All right.
Okay, you probably already read the chart while he was talking, because I wasn't listening to him. I was reading the words, just in case. But 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, we did the survey. We gave some information, did a survey. This is basically the feedback. We had 58 people, which if you do the math, assume most were for families. It's about the normal attendance. So we've captured quite a few people through this process, which is good. That says you're interested in it. 61% said they were full members. There may be confusion, what's a full member, registered member, whatever. We'll clarify that. But as you heard, Stephen said, we're going to start a membership class because the other 40% that come routinely aren't members of our church, and we want to provide that opportunity for them. 95% of the people felt we should move forward with the new facility. 95%. Nobody said we shouldn't. There were a few people that said, I'd like a little more information. 76%, and as the finance guy, this was important from my perspective, over three-quarters of the people said they would give more money routinely on a weekly basis because we know, as we said, it would be more expensive in the new facility versus where we are. And 22% said they would give a one-time contribution aimed probably towards the startup and getting into the facility. 60% said they would help with fundraising, other aspects of the building, and 50% said they would be committed to bring somebody new. Because as you recall from February, we said part of our mission was to grow the church as well, and it might be up to 3 years before we could find a facility we could afford. But this is saying we're still going to move forward if you will, around bringing new people in to help with the growth and meeting their needs. And then finally, 50% said they would actively participate in some outreach mission. And as Jill said, Deb's going to start that up again in a few weeks. So that's basically the feedback, which, as the team looked at, all felt very positive about it. A little bit of uncertainty why only 50% of the people would help us grow the church and bring a friend or whatever to it. But all in all, very positive news.
That's the summary. And the summary led us into believing we need to focus on pretty much four or five key areas. And we're gonna, I want to touch on one of those today. The main thing is moving forward. I think it's awesome that the majority or overwhelmingly majority, and we probably say 95% plus five that just had other questions. And some of them may be part of that 90, you know, maybe 99, 100% now, about moving forward. And that's exciting to me. That tells me that people are like, hey, this is what we feel God's called us to do. And in that process, so we said, that's number one, move forward. Okay, how do we do that? Where's the next steps? The other thing is we learned that stewardship is something that we need to talk about and share. Another thing that Jim mentioned is a more connected through membership. What does membership mean? Stephen quoted the old MasterCard, membership has its privileges. Often, if you've had the experiences I have in any churches, you have a ton of people on membership roles, and you have little active connection with Christ. And that's not what we're about. We're not about pumping up roles so we can send it to someplace and say, aren't we good? I served a church in Lewis, Delaware. The minister there before me had 1,000 members on the roll. When I first went there in three services, there was 298. Okay? Anybody can do that? Even I'm bad at math, but even I can do that math. You know what I mean? That tells there's a lot of people in the roles and a lot of people not connecting or being part of the ministry of the church, or more importantly, connecting to Christ. The other thing was to make a commitment to sharing and bringing others to Christ. That's our discipleship. When we started looking at this, some of you, how many of you participated in the Contagious Christian Bible Study that we did, group study? And what I've learned is a lot of times we've done ourselves a disservice at times by saying, okay, here, we're going to do this for this amount of weeks. And then we get through it and we're like, whew, we're done. But how many of us have put those into practice? A lot of times, remember the scary evangelism things? We're not going to, you know, it used to be a day where you go and knock on a door and every door in the neighborhood. We actually tried that once. Didn't work too well, did it? Had people saying, oh, we'll see you. Haven't ever seen them. And you know what? That's okay. Because guess what? We're not in the early 18th century or 19th century or even 20th century anymore. So we have to develop and have new things, and that happens with our ways. Sometimes it may be, hey, why don't you just come with me to this today? You'll have a good time, all right? That friend who would help you move, ask them. If they help you move, they'll certainly help sit here and listen to me for a bit and maybe connect to Jesus. So I started thinking about this story. Anybody ever heard the legend of Sown Soup? Anybody ever heard of this story? Okay. We're going to kind of bookend this here today with this. I'll start off with a story a little bit, and then we're going to get into a little bit more about Jacob, and we're going to go through. So bear with me. Everybody good? Everybody go like this? All right? Okay, good. Everybody's awake. Just wanted to make sure everybody has a pulse. Starts off this, a kindly old stranger was walking through the land when he came upon a village. As he entered, the villagers moved towards their homes, locking doors and windows, which is probably what they do if we went door-to-door evangelism as well. Am I right? It's either that or bill collectors. One time I was a salesperson, and I remember seeing people walking around and I remember I was coming to collect a bill that they sent me to pay, and I could see people moving, but nobody was coming to the door very quickly. The stranger smiled and asked, "Why are you all so frightened? I'm a simple traveler looking for a soft place to stay for the night and a warm place for a meal. There's not a bite to eat in the whole province," he was told. "We are weak and our children are starving. Better keep moving on." "Oh, I have everything I need," he said. "In fact, I was thinking of making some soup to share with you all." He pulled a cauldron from his cloak, filled it with water, and built a fire. Okay. I want to talk about Jacob. We'll get to the rest of the story. I want to talk about Jacob. Jacob is an interesting character. I purposely named my son, my oldest son, Jacob, because it was similar to Jack. But the name Jacob, anybody know what it means? Anybody know? Heel grabber, deceiver. It's one who's always, he was always trying to get one over on his brother, who was his twin brother, Esau. And he actually did with the help of his mom. This section of scripture is following right when dad Isaac had bad eyesight, couldn't see. Mom liked Jacob better. Esau was out hunting and womanizing with the Canaanite women of the day. And mom wasn't happy about that, neither was dad. But dad liked Esau. So at this point, mom said, let's take advantage of his eyesight. So they put hair all over him here because his brother was real hairy. That's red and hairy, okay? I guess he looked like that creature from Bugs Bunny cartoons, you know, with the tennis shoes, the red hairy guy. And so he you all know who I'm talking about with that one. I should have had a picture of that then. But here he is. He comes, he gets his brother's blessing, finds out that it's all tricked, and Esau was furious and said he was waiting for his dad to die so he could kill his brother. This is where we come to the story at this point. Great family environment, isn't it? Anybody have a family this bad? Anybody close? Okay, we've got some that say yes. So here we come. Here is Jacob at this point. He's living up to his name. Actually, his father says, boy, he really lives up to his name. And Jacob is at this point where now his father says, you are not going to take a Canaanite woman like your brother did. You're going to go back to a land that we came from, to your mother's people, and you're going to marry somebody from there. So here's Jacob. Jacob's received a blessing. He received the birthright. He is the cream of the crop now. His brother hates him. His dad's not too happy with him. And mom's just trying to keep him alive. And now he's headed back, sent back to a land that he's never remembered or was part of. It was his mother's people. And he's going back. So what we have here, and some of you may relate to this, and I think it's good to kind of bring us all on the same table. Because as I looked at this, I began to think about how Haven's ministry came about. And the first thing that Jacob did is Jacob had to leave all that he had known about. All that he had known previously. He had to leave it behind. Interesting, isn't it? Look at what it says. In 28:5, it says, and then Isaac sent Jacob on his way, and he went Padan Haram, to Laban, the son of Bethuel, the Aramean, the brother of Rebekah, the mother of Jacob and Esau. Send him away to a place he had never been. He heard mom talk about it, but he had never been there. He was leaving everything that he would soon be in charge of, everything that he had grown up in. Has anybody ever had to do that in your life or ever been struggling at a point? For me, in starting Haven Church and making that step, I had to leave everything I knew and the comfort of the church denomination I grew up in. And it was hard. It was miserable while I was there, but it was hard to take that step of faith. You know, I kind of felt like Peter getting out of the boat, but he probably jumped out a lot quicker. I felt more like maybe John, who was kind of straddled on both sides, checking the water. You know what I mean? Fred and I were practicing some songs last night, and I said, you know, I was really kind of stupid. I should have waited till Melissa had a job that paid before I did that. And I look back, and I'm like, man, I was really crazy, wasn't it? But sometimes God calls us to leave what is comfortable to us, doesn't he? Anybody had to leave something comfortable that God called you to? Sometimes, you know, I have T-shirts. You can ask my wife after church. She will tell you I have too many T-shirts. And I keep them, and I keep them. I actually wore to football practice one the other night, one of my favorite T-shirts, West Virginia Mountaineers 11-0 in 1993. And somebody looked at me and said, how old is that shirt? And I said, oh, it's 18 years old. Okay, you know, and I stopped and said, wow, I can't wash this thing much more. It'll fall apart. You know, but that's one of my favorite T-shirts. It'll have holes or shoes. And sometimes when you have old shoes, I had a pair of old Nikes running shoes that the bottom, they kept flopping over, so I ripped it off. And you know what? It started causing pain in my foot. They were broken nice, but it started causing pain in my foot because I was walking in a wrong way. Sometimes God calls us, just as he did Jacob, to leave the comfort of something in order to focus and connect with him. And that's exactly what he did. He had to leave, but God didn't just say, go ahead, have fun out there. God was leading him to a place where he was headed that was uncertain, but also promising. That's what God does. God often says, hey, here's this here. I'm not giving you all the answers. I'm not even going to let you know that you're going to be safe. Sometimes God does, as he did with me, put things in my path that, and people alongside that said, hey, it's okay, we're going to take care, we'll make sure. And guess what? When you got into it, boom, those people went away. Those people that were there before to help start, boom, they're gone. But it's only through the faithfulness of God. I had a pastor friend of mine, Bill Sammons, who shared with me one time, and he said, Jack, your faith's not in whatever church I was in or whatever church I was going to. He said, your faith is in God. God is the one who supplies, and he's the one who's going to make the church go, all right? And he has. He's been faithful. So a lot of times, you know, here's Jacob on this journey, pretty shaky. And then I find something really interesting. When Jacob gets to this place, he has an encounter with a stone. And I want to look for this in the scripture that was read for us. It says, when he had reached to a certain place. I love that scripture, a certain place. He hadn't reached the final place, but he'd been to a place where God placed him at that moment. A certain place, a place that God knew he was going to have a connection with him. When he had a certain, when he reached a certain place, he decided to stop for the night. This is verse 11, because the sun had set. And listen to what he does. Taking one of the stones there, okay? Taking one of the stones there, what does he do with it? He makes it a pillow. Now, I don't know about you, but if anybody ever gone camping? Anybody ever slept outside? The last thing I look to put under my head is a rock. I may like dig up some dirt. I may take off my old clothes and wrap up in the towel and lay under that. I've done that before. The last thing on my mind is a rock pillow. I've seen the Sobe pillow. I've seen feather pillows. I've seen, foam pillows. I've never seen somebody try to sell a rock pillow. And I, you know, buy it for $19.95 right here. Your rock pillow. We could call it the Bethel pillow. What do you think? All right? It's ludicrous, isn't it? It's interesting that Jacob is coming from a place of complete comfort and contentment in his home, and God brings him to a certain place where he has to really be uncomfortable. So uncomfortable that the place that he wants to rest his head is on someplace hard. Okay? And he actually goes to sleep. That's the other thing. And what we have is God sometimes places us in our journey in false comfort, false comforted places. We've been blessed to have a school that has helped. We've been blessed to go ahead and have the dance center early on in this. But there have been times of false comfort there. Am I right with that? Anybody who's been part of that? There's been a place that we're a stranger in a strange land. We're in a certain place, but we're not yet where God wants us to be. Anybody feel that? Anybody feel that? Anybody understand that? And so with this, we kind of feel like we're laying our rocks on the head. We're meeting God here, but not to the point that we need to be. Or reverse. Rocks on our head, heads on a rock, same thing. You guys can work with it. All right? So here comes Jacob. As he lays there, he has this false comfort. And there are times when we take the things that we have and we think that we're secure in those. To fool himself that he was in the comfort of his own home, out in the middle of nowhere with a rock pillow, certainly doesn't do anything. And if you're like me, when I have rock pillows, I begin to complain. Anybody get, so what do we do with rocks? Well, we begin to be false comforted by them. And the next thing, and part of this is we begin to complain about them. My gosh, come on, God, you led me into this. I'm tired of this rock. We start saying this, you know? Anybody ever done that with God? Or we may even be still in our place of comfort. I'm sure Jacob had those things. God, you know, mom, you led me into this fooling. Dad, you got to get me out of this, and you got to get rid of Esau. We want Esau gotten rid of rather than us go on the journey where God wants us. Okay? And so we begin to complain about the rocks. You know what? Another thing that we do with our stones, what else do we do? People who live in glass houses do what? Shouldn't throw stones, but they do oftentimes. We throw stones. When I get irritable, when I get frustrated in life, I want to pick up the thing that's driving me the craziest and I want to throw it at somebody. Usually the person, it's either one of two people. Either the person that irritates me the most or the person that loves me the most. Does that make sense to anybody? Anybody do that too? Or am I the only one here? Okay. And while we're doing that, we end up just harming what we should be doing. There's something else that happens when we have stones. Often, they cause us to stumble. Can you imagine if Jacob woke up in the middle of the night and had to go to the bathroom, I guess the third bush on the right or something in Bethel, and he went ahead and, boom, got up and forgot he had his rock pillow and fell? Anybody ever stumbled on something? Don't you feel like a complete imbecile when you do that? You're walking along and you just fall. Anybody ever fallen really well? I remember in high school, they were in Northeast High School, they had this little metal chain. It was kind of like a corded wire rope right there by the senior parking lot, okay? And I was being cool one day, and I decided to step over it, and I caught my foot on it and fell flat on my face as a senior. That's not cool, just in case you don't know, okay? I didn't have the ladies line it up for me after that move, you know what I mean? But sometimes we do these, we're walking along and we stumble. And when we stumble, we least expect it. So we can stumble over stones as well. Another method that we like to do, and I saw it done today, bulldoze. You see, we live in a time, and it was neat that Nicole showed some of those things that happened on there. You know what civilizations used to do when they were destroyed for most of history? What did they do? What did they do? Build on top of it. It's called a tell. And what would happen? They build on top of it and build on top of it and build on top of it. You know why? They didn't have any bulldozers. So they build on top, and it's called a tell. And actually, archaeologists, in order to find out what goes on in the different histories, they take like a pie slice and look at the different natures, and then they begin to excavate from that area. We take the same approach to life as we do to disaster or we do to anything else. Today I pulled into, because I needed some more vegetables for my soup. Remember, I am going to make that, so hang in here. When we pulled in, I remember pulling in there just a few months ago, and there was this big hill with these big trees over at Food Lion. Anybody remember that thing there? Guess what? It's not there anymore. You know why? Because Lowe's or something's going in there, am I right? It's gone. We live in a time where we don't want something, we just bulldoze through it. Rah! If we don't like somebody, we just bulldoze them over. And that's how we often exist in our lives. And it's not, you know, often we lose something by bulldozing over rocks out of our way. But there's also some other interesting things that happen. Is when we can do what Jacob did and commit them. If we look further on, Jacob had this dream at night where, and it's one of those ones that we teach our kids the song. You remember the song, We Are Climbing Jacob's Ladder? Anybody remember that? I used to sing that to Jacob when he was a real little baby. Now it's, shut your mouth and go to bed. That's how I tell him to go to bed now, right? But we used to hold him and sing, We are climbing Jacob's ladder. We are climbing, back and forth. And here's Jacob having this dream, and he's seeing angels ascend and descend on a, what he considered a ladder or a staircase to heaven, back and forth. And God begins to have this really neat discussion with him where he says, I am the Lord your God, the father of Abraham, Isaac. I will give to you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth. You will spread out to the west and to the east and to the north and the south. All people on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. Wow, that's some dream, isn't it? Mine, I'm cool if I'm flying and not falling. But at this point, God renews a promise with him that he gave to his grandfather, Abraham. Look at the promise. The promise is, I will give this land to your descendants. They will be like the dust of the earth. You will spread out to the east and the west and the north and the south. I believe that's a promise that God has for us and the ministry of this church. That he will give to us this land wherever you go, whether it's Harford County, whether it's Delaware, whether it's right in Northeast, whether it's in Rising Sun, Port Deposit, wherever else, whether it's over in Baltimore, I don't care. I believe wherever you are from, that God's promise for this church is much, much more than us just meeting here and leaving week after week and getting into some small groups. That's awesome. But it's much, much more than that. I believe God's promise is that he's going to give to us and to our descendants, maybe 100 years later. I hope Jesus comes back before that. But until he comes back, that he's going to, this, that Haven Church is going to be a place where people connect and grow and know Jesus stronger than ever before. And it'll be in the faith of the forefathers, faith of the people who are here, the faith of the people who instilled faith into you, the faith of, dare I go back to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, those, the ones who had to step out of faith for the love of the Lord. He continues and says, I am with you and I will watch over you wherever you go. I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what you promised. The cool part is God doesn't only promise and say, good luck. God says, I'm going to be with you to accomplish it. And we need to reach a point in our lives, in our 21st century North American mindset, to recognize that we need God with us. We spent far too much time taking God out of our lives and out of our society that we need to place him back to get it right. I don't care if it's Republican, Democrat, it's not going to get right politically, not going to get right emotionally, not going to get right anyway, unless we start to put God in the midst of our lives again. Does anybody agree with me on that? And for us, Christ has to be and continue to be the center point of our existence. And I find it interesting what Jacob does. He wakes up. He says, whoa, what a dream. But this is a special place. And he begins to take that pillow. And he takes that pillow and begins to set it up. Had to be a pretty massive pillow, probably king size. And he begins to set it up. And he anoints it to set it apart for God. And as he does, it says, early the next morning, Jacob took the stone he had placed his head and set it up as a pillar and poured oil on the top of it. And he called that place Bethel, which used to be called Luz. Anybody know what Bethel or Bethel means? Anybody know? It means house of God. Okay? Anybody know what Luz means? Anybody know what Luz? Nobody knows anybody named Luz, do you? Luz means this. Bethel means house of God. Luz means to turn aside, crooked, twisted, deviated, or an almond tree. I think, did I have a picture of an almond tree up there? I'm not sure whether I do or not. An almond tree is a twisted tree. It grows up and it spreads out, but it's really twisted. It's crooked. It's a crooked tree. And I think it's really awesome that God brought him to this crooked place in his life. And you know, being crooked, I'm not saying he was evil and nasty, but brought him to this place which was pretty much a crossroads in his life. It was a crossroads in the ministry where Jacob could have said, you know what, I'm going to go back and I'm tired of this rock under my head. I'm going to go apologize to my brother and give him back what he needs. Or you know what, I've come far enough, I'm done. I'm not going the rest of the way to Laban. And he came to a point in his life where he said, I need more. This is a special place for God. And I'm going to set this up and I'm going to call this place House of God, not choice anymore. This is going to be House of God. And Jacob actually makes a choice then. It's kind of a backhanded choice, which fits in his character, where God promises him, I'll be with you, I'll multiply your people, I'll do this. And Jacob goes into this other discussion where he says, if God will be with me and watch over me on this journey I'm taking and will give me food to eat and clothes to wear so that I may return safely to my father's house, then the Lord will be my God. He makes a conditional promise. But what's really cool, if we go back, and we're not going to do that for the time today, if we go back, God already promised them that, didn't he? And a lot of times we go ahead and we keep trying to test God in our lives. And we just say, God, I know you want us to seek and head forward in a direction. William Arthur Ward, I put that in your bulletin there today. He said, here's what we can do with stones. We can throw stones, we can complain about them, we can stumble on them, we can climb over them, or we can build with them. And that's our last thing there today. Well, our second to last thing is build with them. And I want to go to 1 Peter, one of the most important verses. I think it's really cool that the guy named Rocky, right, uses this term and quotes this in the scripture that we know he wrote. And he says this. He said, as you come to him, the living stone rejected by humans, chosen by God and precious to him, you also like living what? Living stones are being built into a spiritual house to be a holy priesthood, offering spiritual sacrifices to God, acceptable through Jesus Christ. And he uses this quote about a cornerstone or a capstone. The stone the builders have rejected has become the cornerstone. In society then, when they would build, the cornerstone was the main important stone. You looked for one, you even carved it, you made sure it was perfectly level as best as you could get on every side. Anybody know why? Because from the cornerstone, it shaped the rest of the building. If you had a crooked cornerstone, guess what kind of building you were going to have? Crooked. If you had one that was spot on and perfect, it was going to be spot on and perfect. Okay. And as he says this, we learn several things about building with stones. Number one, just like being built onto the cornerstone, our ministry as we go forward is going to be shaped by Christ. Continue to be shaped by Christ in all things. And in order to be living stones, what in the world does that mean? It's not one of those pet rocks. Remember those pet rocks that you used to have? Anybody have a pet rock? Let's see who was the goofy person that bought the pet rock. Okay, yeah. Jill did, I didn't. I was too young. I remember hers was a little gray one, right? Some of them had chains on them, too. Anybody have a chain on them? Yeah, so you could walk it. Who thought of that idea? I mean, that guy is probably a multi-billionaire off of taking rocks and putting chains in them. So we may give you a pet rock here today. And so what we have is living stones mean vibrant and alive. One of the things I started today talking about is, do we need another church in this area strategically, visually? No. But many of you and me also have made choices because maybe some of those churches aren't living stones anymore. I hate to say that because I know and I love many of the churches I've been part of, but many of them are probably just a dead stone, not living stones. And that pains me because to say church and dead, but didn't Jesus remind us at times that some things are like whitewashed tombs? And I pray for those churches and those pastors and leadership that we don't get about sustaining, but we get about doing the work of Christ, okay? And that's not beating up every church. That's just saying that there are some that we all know. Am I right with that? Okay. On top of that, so we need to be shaped by Christ, vibrant and alive, and we need, and he says, so that you may offer sacrifices as a royal priesthood. The priest used to offer sacrifice. And I think that's kind of interesting because how many of us say, hey, I want to sacrifice right now? But that's really what servant ministry is about. Because guess what? In order to accomplish what God has called this church to do, we're all going to have to sacrifice in some way. Some of us may sacrifice our time by helping with construction. Some of us may sacrifice time by helping with fundraising. Some of us may sacrifice a trip to McDonald's in order to meet that $24 needed a week per adult. Okay? Sacrifice. But you know, there's a difference between sacrificing when you're standing there and somebody's taking it from you than rather doing being, we sacrifice in the way Christ called us to be. Jesus freely laid his life down and it was a painful sacrifice physically. But it was a tremendous the best gift ever given. And he freely gave it. He offered his life as a sacrifice. And so we too, when we call ourselves Christians, need to recognize that part of this is sacrifice. And the last thing we get to do, I know you've been waiting, you've been so patient and awesome, we get to make soup. And we're going to, in order to do so, we're going to follow the recipe from somewhat from the rest of this stone soup. And so what this man did is he came in, and what did he say? He said, I have everything I need. In fact, I was thinking of making some stone soup to share with you. And he pulled this cauldron out, and then he went ahead and he built a fire. We're not going to build a fire today because I think we'll be in trouble. He built a fire, and then he said, wait a second. He found the well in town. Sorry, no wells here. We're going with this. And he went ahead and he began to pour water into this cauldron. And then he said, let me see here. He said, I've got this. And he pulled this stone out. And he said, it's a magic stone. And he pulled it out of his knapsack and he began to put it in the water. And as he put this stone in the water, it began to boil. With great ceremony, people came out from their hiding places and wanted to see what was going on when this man drew this ordinary stone out and put it in this cauldron of water. He began to stir it occasionally here and there. Began to stir. And then he sat there, and when the people who were starving for something heard that somebody's cooking something, found that he was cooking with a water and a stone, they were intrigued because they were hungry. And so he came and he said, this is stone soup. It looks really, really good. And he said, he started licking his lips as he began to look in, and the stranger said, I do like tasty soup. Of course, some soup with some cabbage is a little bit better. And wouldn't you know, somebody up the road, somebody heard it, heard the rumor, went ahead and he reached under a place in his where he'd been hiding. Remember, they didn't have any food. He was hiding this cabbage. So he comes and he says, here you go, stranger. And the stranger placed the cabbage right in there. And it began to boil, began to cook. He said, that smells so good. I just wish I had some other things. And finally, somebody else came and said, hey, I have a couple carrots. And they went ahead and he went and got them. And since they were hungry, he blew it off and put it back in. Ten-second rule, okay? Then somebody else said, hey, I've got an onion. I've been saving for a long time for me and my family because I knew we didn't have anything to eat. We were saving it because we really like onions, but here you go. So they came and he came to the town and they also put in the onion. Before you knew it, somebody else came. What did they have? They said, well, let's spice it up a little bit. I got some peppers. And another person said, hey, I've got some tomatoes. Another person says, let's throw in some cucumbers. Said, okay, that's good. We'll throw that in there too. So they had those. Somebody else came and said, it's really still missing something. What else could it be missing? It's good, but, I really like, it'd be good if we had something really, really extra to add in there. And finally, somebody came and they brought a chicken. They brought a chicken. And they said, here you go. And he placed it in the pot, began to stir it up more and more, another carrot comes in. Hey, they found another carrot. And before you know it, it started smelling wonderful. There was something that was different that was going on there. He had to even add some more water in the midst of it because it was going so well and moving on so long and so beautiful. Before you knew it, the stone with water, that was stone soup, came and he began to go ahead and pass it around to where they began to share and eat and everybody was fed. And said it was the best soup they ever had. Anybody want to try? The stranger began to leave town. And as he began to leave town, the soup was, soup was rolling along. Got to get my stone out of the bottom. And as the soup was done, he took it out. He got it all fixed up. Put it back in his knapsack. And a villager came up to him and said, "Hey, let me pay. I'm wealthy. I didn't have any food, but I'm wealthy. Can I give you some money for that magic stone?" He said, "Sorry, it's not for sale. There's many people who need to be fed." And he took the stone and put it in his hands. We're going to stop there because we got some things to hand out. Got some things to hand out real quick, and then we'll finish this up in a couple minutes. Okay? There's a couple things we need. We can have some more here, and I can help spread them out. On the bottom of the sheet is this legend of stone soup, a abbreviated version of it. Okay. Here you go. Let me pass them down. It's an abbreviated version of it. And when I look at the ministry of church and of this church, I think stone soup puts it really good. This church is not about Jack Cohen, never has been, never will be. The day it becomes that way, I'm done. Okay? But the whole legend of stone soup is alone we just have cabbage, alone we just have a rock and a pot with water in it. But together, we have something that feeds a lot of people. A lot of hungry people, okay? And I believe that's what Jesus wants to do. I can tell you, how I look at this rock right here is what we have now. This is our budget. This allows us to pay salaries. This allows us to rent this building. This allows us to get a little bit here, a little bit there, but we just make it. We've got stone and water. But sometimes stone and water doesn't fulfill the needs of the hungry people that are out there. What does? But what I would dare say is that we've got some carrots out here. We've got some cabbage. We may even have a chicken that somebody brings out here. And through that, I guarantee you there are people wherever we go. Remember the promise? From the north to the south to the east to the west. Jacob needed his family and others to help him with that, and God needs his family to help with there. Did you want to share any specifics about this, Jim? Okay. Let's go ahead. Okay. This is it's pretty self-explanatory. We'll look over this, and you're also going to receive your own little pet rock to place on your... And I'll tell you what I want you to do with this in a second. Just go over this very quickly. I will share my blessings in building a legacy. We've been talking a lot about legacy, and that's what it's about. We talk about Jacob still, not because he was a deceiver, but because he built a legacy for God and was faithful to him. And this is part of what we're doing to help us make sure that the 95% that said, yeah, let's go for it, that we can keep heading on. Part of that, is the first section is what you feel that you may pledge in order to support the rock for 2012, okay? And then we're going to talk about the vegetables and the chicken is the next line, if you want to put it that way. Also, I plan on sharing my blessings and building a legacy through the building fund by contributing blank per week, blank per month, blank per year, a one-time gift. So those options there. We also recognize that circumstances do change. And there's a verse of scripture that's really cool. God loves a cheerful giver. I think I have a video, don't I? And I just want you to show this. You might have to turn it up really loud, and I want you to show you a face of a cheerful giver, okay? What are you doing?
I'm folding it.
You're folding? You helping?
Yes.
Why are you helping?
Like
What is it for? Oh, make sure you fold it nice.
That's for text.
Yeah, good girl. I was printing out bulletins. It's a crazy week. I was sick and yada, yada, yada. I could go on and on. And I'm folding printing out bulletins. Everybody got a bulletin today? If you have one that's folded a little bit off, she did it. You know? And did you see her? I said, what are you doing? She smiled real big. I said, why are you doing it? She said, I'm helping Daddy. I said, what are you doing it for? She said, for church. That's a cheerful giver. I didn't have to bribe her like I do in everything else in life. All she wanted to do was to help and contribute. To help her father, to help her daddy, and to help her church, which she loves dearly. My question to you, do you have that same fervor for this church and this ministry? Do you want to help your daddy? Anybody want to help your daddy? You want to help? For church. Not for church. For church. I want to change the definition of church in this area. You know? I want it to be a place where people who are seniors and juniors and college students say, where are you going? I'm going down to hang out at church. What? Wouldn't that be cool? Because it's a place they want to be and spend. And guess what? We're going to have to do it differently than it's been done. And that's exciting to me. I don't know about you. But in order to be a cheerful giver, guess what? Number one, there's confidentiality. There's only one person who will get this, and that's our financial person. And he's tight-lipped. He didn't even tell his wife anything, right? So, I mean anything at all. So, I don't want you to just fill this out. This isn't one of these things like the survey. Throw it in. We're going to have you take this home, unless you have a stainless steel refrigerator, because I heard that the other day. Maybe your dishwasher is not stainless steel. Maybe you can put it on there. Put it on your car. I don't care. I'm with one of those big magnets riding down the road. But I want you to look at this, and I want you to pray over it. Just, God, I want you to lead me to where you want. You know I'm having problems paying bills, but I want you to push my heart. I want to help my daddy for church. Okay? And I want you to put that pet rock magnet right over top of it and put it on the front of your refrigerator, not on the side where you lose it with the rest of stuff, but right where you go to eat. And every time you go to eat, I want you to think about the people that are spiritually starving in this world who need stone soup. Spiritual stone soup. And then look at that every so often. In a few weeks, we're going to announce the day in advance, and we'll probably have extras of these just in case. I want you to, it's perforated, cut that off, and we're going to have a big pot up here without water and chicken in it, but with a stone in it. And we're going to ask you to come up and place that in there as your contribution to stone soup. We trust that we have the rock. We trust. God and you have been a blessing in that. But there's still hungry people out here. And we believe God is calling us, as you did, to this next venture in ministry. All right? On the back is a real easy chart. You guys have probably already looked at it and shut me out. That's cool. But it's listed in salaries, annual income, $2,500 to $100,000, more or less. You can figure that out. And it's got 1% to 10%. You hear churches talk about tithe. I believe in that. We practice it in our family. But you may not be there. And this isn't one we're going to hunt you down and shoot you if you don't do that. I want a cheerful giver. I want you to say, hey, I want to help my daddy. This is for church. That's what we want in the pot here. We don't want, for church. Because that's not what we're about. We're about reaching people for Jesus Christ to know and Christ, grow in Christ, serve, and share Jesus. So we are going to talk about those four elements, not in succession. In a couple weeks, we're going to talk about what it means to be a member and what membership is. And if you're already a member, in updating the stuff. It's not, Stephen and I have talked about it, we don't believe in grandfathering. We believe that we want to update, and we're going to challenge you to challenge yourself. Is this something that you want to be part of, actively in part of? Okay? Is that a good thing? It's a good thing. Okay? So as we end this, I want to share this last thing. As the man left the town, he walked over to a little boy, and he handed it to the little boy, and he said, it wasn't the stone that was magic. It was not the stone, but the villagers had performed the magic. The stone's not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. It's the villagers here that we call Haven Community Church that's going to accomplish God's blessings and feed those who are spiritually starving.